Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Coming up on NFL Live, the Packers turned more than a few heads when they moved up to draft Jordan Love, including that of their current quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Hear what he has to say about his career in Green Bay. Cam Newton still looking for a landing spot. The Chargers explain why they didn't make a run at the former Panthers quarterback. And we grade the offseason moves in the AFC East. Find out who's at the head of the class in the division dominated by New England for two decades. But don't forget the Bills. Here's one prominent Bills fan.
Hockey, basketball, baseball, football, whoever can reopen, we're a ready, willing, and able partner. Personal disclosure, I want to watch the Buffalo Bills.
We'll have more on the NFL's proposed plan to return just a little later, including some optimism by the governor of New York. I'm Wendy Nix. Marcus Spears is here, Tim Hasselbeck, and Dan Graziano as well. Meanwhile, as I mentioned before, we've all wondered aloud what Aaron Rodgers' reaction to his team's draft day decision would look like. And now we know just a little bit more. It was perhaps the most surprising pick of the draft when the Packers selected quarterback Jordan Love. Putting an end to the speculation about his thoughts, Aaron Rodgers addressed the situation for the first time over the weekend.
You know, the general reaction at first was surprise, I think, like many people. Obviously, I'm not going to say that I was, thrilled by the pick necessarily, but I understand the organization is thinking not only about the present, but about the future. And I respect that. He didn't get asked to be drafted by the Packers. There's nothing, he's not to blame at all. He's just coming in excited about his opportunity. We had a great conversation the day after the draft, and I'm excited to work with him.
Jordan's going to have the ability to learn from one of the greatest to ever play the game. And he's just going to sit back, and you learn so much by watching a guy play at such a high level.
I think what it does is just reinforce kind of the adage that you can only control what you can control. So my, sincere desire to start and finish with the same organization may not be a reality at this point. And as much as I understand the organization's future outlook and wanting to make sure they're thinking about the team now and down the line, and I respect that, at the same time, I still believe in myself and have a strong desire to play into my 40s, and I'm just not sure how that all works together at this point.
Well, that seems like a pretty good jumping off spot for overreaction Monday, and here's where we'll start. Aaron Rodgers will not finish his career in Green Bay. Marcus, I start with you. Is that an overreaction?
No, it's not. Not an overreaction. I expect Aaron Rodgers to actually want out before that time is ending on his contract. I know a lot of people have talked about the cap hit, and I know a lot of people have talked about giving Jordan Love enough time to develop. Aaron Rodgers feels like Green Bay has already moved on. And look, I know a lot of people took away from what he said as a very professional, very calm, stoic demeanor about talking about it. I'm so glad he mentioned that Jordan Love didn't have any responsibility as being a part of what the organization and Aaron Rodgers in particular, their relationship is. But I don't believe Aaron Rodgers is going to embrace being in Green Bay more than past this year, knowing that they made a decision looking towards the future with Jordan Love instead of what everybody else is saying, not getting him any help to win now.
Marcus, I agree with you that it's not an overreaction to say that Aaron Rodgers won't finish his career in Green Bay, because it seems like he himself is already confronting the increased likelihood of that. He talked about not being able to control it anymore because the clock will be ticking toward Jordan Love's time. But in terms of the short term, I can't agree with you. I listening to him on the call on Friday, he talked about that they were 13-3 last year. He talked about the young receivers and the possibility that some of them will develop. This is a guy very much focused on the now, and I think he truly believes that this is a Green Bay Packers team that can once again contend for the Super Bowl, if not reach it. And I think he'll be focused on what he can still accomplish in Green Bay for the 1 year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever it is that he has left there.
Well, it's a clean sweep when you're talking about it not being an overreaction. I don't think there's any question that there's a good shot, and we've seen it before, whether it's been Brett Favre, whether it's been Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. Guys do finish elsewhere. Look, I don't know that I agree with Marcus's timeline of a one-year situation. I think he's there for at least 2 years. But then at that point, I think it gets really, really tricky. And then beyond that, let's say it does go beyond that. Look, I think at that point, then you do have an aging Aaron Rodgers who will be on a contract that probably won't look that appealing to the player. And then at that point, then I think it's even more likely that he finishes somewhere else, especially with this investment into Jordan Love.
Well, he certainly opened the door for a questionable future in Green Bay. I think you have to assume at some point he walks through it. Meanwhile, from one quarterback who could eventually be on the move to one who's already on the move, Cam Newton, still a free agent more than a month after he was released by the Carolina Panthers. When he was released, the Chargers were considered a potential landing spot for the former MVP. But instead, they opted to stick with what they have. Here's the head coach on the team's decision.
Absolutely. You know, Cam's a tremendous quarterback. He's been MVP of this league. He's led his team to the Super Bowl. And he's healthy now, from what I hear. So Cam's going to be on somebody's roster. He's going to help somebody win a few games. But, yeah, we did take a look at that. I mean, I feel really good about the quarterback room that I have.
Well, the Achilles heel here, almost literally, is the injuries of Cam Newton's career, missing a total of 19 games, including 16 over the last two seasons. And part of the reason for the injuries is that Newton has been contacted on more offensive plays than any other quarterback since entering the NFL in 2011. Quite simply, it's the way he plays in part. So again, on Overreaction Monday, Cam Newton will not start a game in 2020. Tim, I'll start with you.
Well, assuming we're playing football games in 2020, which I'm going to start with that assumption, I think it's an overreaction. I think Cam Newton can really help somebody. I really do. Now, assuming he's healthy, and you heard Anthony Lynn say, you know, that he's heard that he's healthy. We have seen Cam kind of post some workout videos. He does look healthy. I think some of these teams, when they do get into whatever offseason they have, whatever training camp they have, we're going to look at their quarterback situation and realize that there's a guy, when you don't look at the 2019 season, because he basically missed all of it, that over the last four seasons passed for 100 touchdowns and rushed for 25. That type of production cannot be ignored, on top of the fact that he's been an MVP, he's led a team to a Super Bowl. As Anthony Lynn said, Cam Newton's not done starting games in the NFL, in my opinion.
I'm with Tim. It's an overreaction. And the reason being, for all of the things that he stated, but also we know that most of the time when coaches and general managers get into training camp, they realize they don't have a guy, or that the guy is not what they thought they were. And Cam Newton sitting out there, possibly not on a team, the phone will blow up with teams and coaches throughout training camp if it goes into that long, and if we have a training camp for Cam Newton to come and provide his services and eventually taking over at some point during the season as a starter. I'm with Tim. I don't think this is a prognosis of what Cam Newton is as a football player. It has everything to do with the injury and not being able to see him last year. But once camp starts, and once coaches start to realize, quarterback coaches, offensive coordinators, head coaches, general managers, once they start to realize, hey man, one guy says to another guy, hey, you know Cam Newton is still out there, right? And that's all it's going to take for that match to get lit. And then it'll be a totally different tone in regards to Cam Newton playing quarterback for some team in the NFL.
Well, we've put an especially intelligent pair of former NFL players on today's panel. I agree with both of them. It is an overreaction to say that Cam Newton won't start a game in 2020. More than half the league uses more than one quarterback every single year. Situations change. He's going to be in someone's building at some point, and he's going to be a legitimate option for some team at some point, whether it's because of injury to a starter, whether it's because the projected starter didn't turn out to be quite as ready as the team hoped. that he would. I think we're starting to see things relax a little bit in terms of people's ability to move around in the pandemic. And I think as that happens, Cam Newton will get somewhere, get a physical, and be able to be signed by a team. And once he is, I think he becomes a legitimate, depending where he ends up, but I think he becomes a legitimate option, certainly to start at least one game in 2020.
Well, we all know the quarterback situation is a war of attrition, and that's true league-wide. In other quarterback news, Colts coach Frank Reich does not believe Philip Rivers' stay in Indianapolis will be brief, for just 1 year, that is, despite the fact that he's already accepted his next job as a high school football coach. On Monday, the head coach said 38-year-old quarterback still has the ability to play for a number of years in the NFL. We take a look back at last season's AFC East standings. The Patriots won their 11th straight division title with a 12-4 record. The Bills, though, not far behind. They finished 10-6 and saw the postseason for the second time in three seasons. But then there have been big changes. And we start with Tom Brady. He left New England after 20 seasons. He won an NFL record 6 Super Bowl titles with the Patriots. Also threw for the most yards and touchdowns for a single team in league history. The Bills traded a first-round pick for wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Last season, Diggs averaging 7.9 yards per reception. That's the fourth highest in the league last season. In the draft, the New York Jets reinforced their offensive line by taking Mekhi Becton in the first round in 2019. The Jets allowed the highest pressure percentage in the league at 37%. And finally, the Dolphins seem to have found their quarterback, drafting Tua Tagovailoa. According to Elias, the Dolphins have not had a Pro Bowl quarterback since Dan Marino in 1995, and that would be the longest active drought in the NFL. And speaking of the Dolphins, they've made several big splashes this offseason, including making Byron Jones the highest-paid corner based on guaranteed money, as well as signing former Patriots linebacker Kyle Van Noy. In total, Miami has spent over $230 million this offseason on free agents. That's the most by any team over the last 10 years. And so here we go. We will grade each team's offseason, and we'll continue with the AFC East. So, gentlemen, I know you all have your boards. You should anyway. We'll see how that goes. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But go ahead and let me see your grades. What do we got?
Well, for me, Wendy, I'm going to take it away. The new name, too, for the Dolphins is the Miami South Beach Dolphins. And they get an A++. Because of all the things that you just pointed out that they did in this offseason. First of all, it goes back to the end of last season with them beating the Patriots. Also, I talked about it. I'm one of the guilty parties that said they were tanking for Tua. Well, actually, Flores and company wasn't. They were trying to win games and continue to get better throughout the season. They got Tua, Van Noy, Byron Jones, Shaq Lawson, Austin Jackson to protect their valuable young rookie quarterback. I think they did a tremendous job this offseason, but it started at the end of last season with what Flores was able to do with that football team.
Well, I like Marcus's grade. I'm actually giving him an A-, and the only reason is that they did draft a quarterback that was injured. But Marcus is absolutely right in terms of, you know, kind of how far back this goes in terms of what they've done to build this football team. Tua, I think, is ready. Let's assume that the doctors give him a clean bill of health, say he's good to go. I think he is ready to play. I think based on what he did in college, I think it actually fits great in the National Football League. And then in the process of them getting better, they also weakened their division. When you look at guys that came over from New England, or in Shaq Lawson's case, come from Buffalo, but then also supplement that with guys like Byron Jones that can come from Dallas. So I think weakening the opponents in your own division, getting better, and then also obviously probably finding the quarterback of your future in the draft. So giving them an A-, but, you know, probably splitting hairs between that A++ and that A-.
Yeah, no question. Speaking of splitting hairs, what did I see from Dan? Have we seen yours? Dan? Oh, B+. Now, couldn't get it into A category, huh? Not quite.
But I thought this was a good grade until I heard everybody else. I mean, I feel like 3 weeks ago we were talking about, you know, is Tua too big a risk to take that high, and they go ahead and take him, and now it's like they got the future figured out. I think they probably do, but I think we have to at least allow for the possibility that they don't. And I think, you know, you look at what they've done in terms of adding Byron Jones. I mean, they've got a lot of money sunk into the cornerback position right now. That needs to work. And in terms of the offensive line, is the first-round pick going to really be a left tackle? Is Eric Flowers going to be worth what they spent on him? I mean, you know, I think they're moving in the right direction. B-plus is a good grade. But I have a little bit of hesitation before going to the Marcus Spears stratosphere there of A++.
A++ is strong to quite strong, Marcus. I'm going to have to give Dan that. But anyway you look at it, they're making forward some positive momentum there in Miami. Let's talk about the Jets. Meanwhile, they have made sure to surround Sam Darnold with playmakers on the outside, as well as a stable offensive line. They signed wide receiver Breshad Perriman. He had a career high in catches and receiving yards last season. And they also drafted Denzel Mims. And I mentioned this before the O-line, they signed George Fant and then drafted Mekhi Becton. So, again, this time we'll start with Tim. Let me see your grades, fellas. What you got? This is, again, the Jets.
I'm going A-minus with the Jets, and I probably should address my grading. I was a much tougher grader before my kids started doing school at home. And I think now, just in appreciation of the teachers, I've been a much easier grader on everyone in general. So I'm going A-minus there, but mainly because the stuff that you've kind of alluded to, Wendy, when you look at it, you know, Sam Darnold, I think, is a really talented young player, but keeping him healthy is imperative. Surrounding him with talent is imperative. And so what have they done? They invested in free agency in that offensive line. They do the same thing in the draft. Mekhi Becton, I believe, is going to be a superstar. Talked to the Louisville coaches, had a couple of his games. He is a rare, rare athlete. And so I think you look at that and then drafting Mims and kind of trying to give Darnold some help. I think they are doing the right things when you look at the New York Jets and trying to help their young quarterback. So I like it a lot. Give me A-. I am an easy grader.
Well, you know, I'll take this. I'll go B. Is that good for you, Graziano? Let me tell you why. It's because there's two things. I like Mims. I like Mims. Love the way he played at Baylor. I think he's going to be big time in the league. And Mekhi Becton is a guy that gives Sam Darnold comfort. He's a big physical presence on the outside of that offensive line. But I can't grade a team badly if they add Frank Gore. I will never in the history of me doing television, as long as Frank Gore is associated with an organization, give them a bad grade. He's done nothing but lift teams that he's been around. I think he'll be a tremendous guy in that locker room. He'll be a tremendous guy for Sam Darnold and younger players in that Jets franchise. I think about the other side, Jamal Adams. Think about what Frank Gore and the type of knowledge he can bring to Jamal Adams and giving those guys a shot like that. And look, the New York Gaze Jets got better when they brought in Frank Gore. I love the draft, but Frank Gore is the reason why I give them a B. I just got to get Sam Darnold to stop seeing ghosts, and hopefully that's this year, Tim Alphabet.
Yeah, sooner rather than later on that front would probably help the cause. Dan, what you got?
Well, I want B minus. A lot more reasonable take, obviously, from Marcus this time. But, you know, I just realized listening to all this, we're talking about teams that have a long way to go, right? Like the Jets have not been contenders for a long time. The Dolphins have not been contenders for a long time. Bills more lately, but these are teams that have done a lot, that need to do a lot of building. So the Jets, I do like some of what they've done this offseason. I like the idea of having an offseason that's centered around putting a group around Sam Darnold, make it, possible for him to succeed. Did they add the right pieces? Is George Fant a starter at tackle? I mean, you can kick that back and forth. Do they have enough on defense? But I think the Jets are moving in the right direction, much like the Dolphins. I guess my grading is probably a result of saying I don't feel like they're quite there yet. Maybe that's unfair. Maybe we should just be grading the offseason and not the overall state of the team. But I'm wrestling with that during the break, maybe.
Yeah, take a stab at it. Well, listen, homeschooling's done nothing for you, man. You're a tough grader. We're not signing up for your class.
I got teenagers.
Yeah, well, fair. I hear you there.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
The NFL has now a proposal that would allow teams to improve draft picks if they hire minority head coaches or general managers. The proposal was submitted by the league's diversity committee and is expected to be addressed with team owners. The number of minority head coaches in the league has been cut in half since 2018. There are only four minority head coaches in the league: Mike Tomlin, Ron Rivera, Anthony Lynn, and Brian Flores. There's also only two minority general managers in the NFL. Here's NFLPA executive committee member Sam Acho on what he thinks about this proposal.
Problem is, it can't be about incentives. It's got to be about giving the right coaches the right opportunities. The problem with the NFL is that there's so much cronyism. It's all about who you know. Oftentimes, NFL coaches aren't the best coaches. They're not. Oftentimes, people talk about the politics and the business of football. It's about who you know, and no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to talk about it, but NFL is about who you know.
I was surprised, probably as you guys were, because I'm not in any of those conversations at this time. But, you know, I get it. You know, I see what the diversity committee is trying to do to create change, and I commend them all for that. I think it's just an attempt. I think the conversations mean that people are trying on all sides, you know, trying to find solutions, you know, but if we haven't found a solution, then maybe we don't fully and truly understand the problem.
We welcome in the undefeated Dominic Foxworth, who joins us now. He formerly served as the NFLPA president. Dominic, what are your thoughts, first of all, on the latest proposal from the league?
I got to be honest, I've changed my mind since this morning. I was on Get Up this morning and I didn't really like it, but I've given it some further thought. And I actually think that while I don't think the incentives that are set up right now are right, I think incentivizing teams to do the right thing is the right way to go about it. Because if you want to change someone's behavior or organization behavior, you either got the carrot or the stick. If they're not going to go the punishment route, they have to go the incentive route. And maybe they need to figure out a better way to incentivize these teams to do this. Maybe it's over, you average it over several years, how many minorities you have in leadership's roles, you figure it out that way. But right now, the problem is the owners. And you can't get rid of the problem. So you have to incentivize the problem to behave in the way that you want. And if you're not going to do that, you could go back to the stick way, which is probably a lawsuit. And what Monty Jones brought up in a conversation I had with him earlier is that that's what brought about the Rooney Rule. It was the threat of Johnny Cochran suing the league. That's what brought about the Rooney Rule, some sort of threat. So you either have to have the carrot or the stick, and I'd rather have the carrot in this case.
Well, I think there's a legit point for both sides and how you see it. I think it's disheartening as a black man to hear that they have to be incentivized to hire you on your merits. I think that's the part that everybody is having trouble with. You guys know me. I'm a real foundational guy. I don't get altruistic about all of the things that are ancillary that are working in dynamics against or with. To me, the problem is from an emotional standpoint, and when you look at this, like a lot of black coaches are looking at it, and to Dominique's point, I'm in no way am I saying Dominique's point is wrong. My point is the notion that in the year 2020 that we need to incentivize NFL owners, that we need to give something to you in order for you to hire qualified applicants of color in GM and head coaches roles is disheartening with where we are or where we're supposed to be in sports culture, in sports society. We know it's real. We sit on this this network and we talk about these things as they come up. So this is another one of those things that have racial lines, the football, the outcomes, and all of those things. The part that people are struggling with that I've talked to, and quite frankly, the part that I struggle with, is that there still needs to be incentive for you to hire African-American head coaches and general managers when the few that have had the opportunity for the large part has shown you that they are well qualified and can do the job at a high level. That's the part that's disheartening.
It's unfortunate, but then we have to get past that. Like, that's the world that we live in. That's a sad thing. So then the next step is, what are you going to do about it? And I think that I understand. I heard Lewis Riddick make the point, and other people make the point, that it would be terrible to be hired into a job and have people looking at you and think that you're only hired because of some incentive that was offered and people talking about you and treating you as if you don't belong there. And then I thought about it a little further and said, hey, that's kind of something that all minorities, women, LGBT people, black people. That's something that we have become accustomed to. If you reach some level of success, people are going to act like you don't belong and treat you like you don't belong. It is part of the cost of creating some sort of progress. So it's unfortunate. I hate it. I would hate to go into a job that way. But you know what's worse than going to a job that way? It's not going into a job at all that you absolutely deserve. So I don't know what the other answer is. This problem is a tough problem. This solution is clumsy and ham-handed. But I mean, it's better than right now. The Rooney Rule was an opportunity for owners to prove that they do not have these biases. The Rooney Rule was going to put some candidates, force you to take a look at some candidates and then hope that you would see that these candidates are qualified as the other candidates and maybe more qualified. That didn't work. We put the candidates in front of them and they still didn't hire them. And then they fired them after 1 year. So what do you do now? That's what I say. We're at carrot or stick territory. So I like to go with the carrots. We got to figure out a better way to make this system work. I don't think as it's currently proposed is good, because I also don't think that it's strong enough. The incentive's not strong enough. No one is going to hire someone to run their team because they might be able to move up a few picks in the third round.
Tim, let me get you to weigh in here and ask it like this. Where else do you think that football in general can improve when it comes to the minority hiring process and the coaching ranks?
Well, I think, you know, when, you know, Dominique is talking about how, you know, he doesn't like this solution and it's clumsy and, you know, and it may be not even effective. You know, I think what that speaks to is that the NFL is trying to find a way to kind of fix this problem in the National Football League, but they're trying to fix a problem that they don't just control themselves. And so I think when you look at the National Football League, and we can look at the number of minority head coaches and general managers and coordinators for that matter, I think you also need to look at the college ranks and realize that, you know, there's 130, you know, or around there FBS programs, and there's less than 25, you know, minority head coaches, you know, in those ranks. And so when you just look at any coach, so many coaches kind of start to kind of make their name and build their reputation in the college ranks. Like, look, Joe Judge is the head coach of the New York Giants. He started at Mississippi State. And then, you know, to kind of through reputation ends up at Alabama. And then from Alabama ends up working for the Patriots and then gets a head coaching job. And so I think if we're just looking at this from a NFL perspective, like, hey, the NFL is going to cure this and fix this, I don't think they have the power to do that when, you know, the colleges are providing candidates as players, but they're also providing candidates as coaches. And if they're not providing, you know, a diverse group of coaches, you know, in terms of the opportunities at the next level, then I think it's a problem bigger than the NFL can handle on their own.
Dan, the owners' meetings initially were scheduled for this week, like so much that's changed. But what can you tell us regarding the discussions on this proposal regarding minority hiring?
So there's a conference call tomorrow with owners, and all these proposals would need 24 out of 32 owners to vote yes in order to be enacted. So a couple things people need to understand. The proposal where you would incentivize teams to hire minority head coaches and GMs by improving their third-round draft pick is the one that's getting the headlines and one that's getting the most attention, but it's also probably the most far-fetched. I don't know for a fact that it's expected to pass. There are other proposals. Number one, the league is proposing to ease the restrictions on coordinator hiring. Right now, you can freeze an assistant coach in place and say, no, you can't go interview for that offensive coordinator position because it's not really a promotion from where you are right now. They're going to try and ease those restrictions. They're going to propose a rule that would incentivize teams to hire minority candidates for quarterback coach positions. And that's, you know, the idea is to replenish the pipeline, not solve the problem top down, but solve it from the bottom up. And I think there are a couple other things there that you're going to see in terms of changes in the way coaches are hired in the NFL over the coming years. But the big one, the one that's got people's attention, is a pretty startling admission of failure by the league in terms of the Rooney Rule. I mean, if nothing else, even if it doesn't pass, I think the owners who are in favor of it are going to hope that it sends a message to everybody, hey, whether you like it or not, we are serious about this issue, and we're going to continue to work on it until it improves.
Another topic I am sure that will be proposed tomorrow, Dan, is the reopening. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo today expressed his hope that major sports teams would think about returning without fans in the stands. Where does the NFL stand right now?
So the NFL continues to talk about contingency plans for the season, continues to say publicly that they hope and are optimistic the season will start on time, people will play in their home stadiums, but they are watching what other leagues are doing. The Bundesliga, the German soccer league that reopened this past weekend, is one on which the NFL has a very close eye, you know, similar-sized stadiums. They're playing without fans. You see the bench players sitting in the stands with masks on, three or four seats apart from each other. You see the precautions that are taking place. I know the NFL was interested in the testing procedures there and at the NASCAR race that was held yesterday. So they're talking about a number of different things. It is, in the opinion of most NFL decision makers, from what I can tell, too soon to make any decisions. They don't have to make decisions yet. But yes, the possibility of opening on time in September in empty stadiums or partially filled stadiums is something that has absolutely been discussed among NFL owners. Another thing that's being discussed, and watch out for this, if there's a loss, significant loss of revenue in 2020 as a result of, you know, canceled games or no fans in the stands, you could see a fight between the owners and the players, much like what's going on in Major League Baseball right now in terms of, does the 2021 salary cap go down? You know, the owners are going to go to the players and probably talk about sharing some of the pain, and that could be contentious as well. A lot of discussion still to be had before the NFL is back on its feet.
Yeah, that's very difficult. Can I make one last point, though, about the minority hire situation? Is I think that it should be noted that the NFL should be commended for taking this problem on. And to Tim's point, I agree that it's not a problem that they only created. Like, it's been a problem in our country for centuries. And I would like to point out that even though it's not in their control, or excuse me, it's not a problem that they created and it's not their responsibility to solve it nationwide, it is a problem that is on their lap. And I appreciate them addressing it, but they should address it, because it just made me think about my backyard. We have a hill in my backyard and the mud slides down onto our patio. I didn't build that hill. That's not my problem. But you know what? When it's time for us to go eat on the deck, that patio better be clean. So I can blame God or whoever put that hill back there. It does not matter. The NFL has this problem and they need to address it. So I appreciate that they are trying to address it in a smart way. It's not necessarily smart yet, in an aggressive way.
All right, Dominic, thanks for joining
us.
Wendy. It was certainly, and has been certainly, the story of the offseason. Tom Brady signing with the Bucs as a free agent after 20 years with the Patriots, where he helped them, by the way, to a record 17 division titles, 6 wins in 9 Super Bowl appearances. The Patriots lost several key contributors outside of Brady. Jamie Collins signed with the Lions after leading the team in tackles and sacks. They also traded tight end Rob Gronkowski to the Bucs after he spent last season retired. They did add quarterback Brian Hoyer to compete with Jared Stidham for the starting job. Now, we've gone through the AFC East in part. We talked about the Dolphins. We talked about the Bills. In terms of offseason grades for the Patriots, let's see what you got. Marcus, we'll start with you.
All right, whiteboard time. Hold on, Wendy. I just erased my grade on accident. I got the New England Brady-less Pats at a C. And the reason being is because, listen, this grade would be a D or an F in the offseason if Bill Belichick wasn't the head coach. But I still have confidence that Bill Belichick knows how to put a team together and win games outside of what he may lack on either side of the ball. Granted, we talked all last year about this offense not being that good. They won 12 games and got into the playoffs. So he did something right. Now, the fact that Tom Brady has left and departed and the New England Patriots are sitting there with an unproven guy that we all think will be the starter in Stidham leaves me with a C. They leave me no choice, Wendy Nix, but to give them a C right now. I hope Bill Belichick can improve this grade as the season goes along.
Well, I think Marcus and I can teach some classes together. I'll be his teaching assistant because I'm going C as well. Here's the reality of the situation in New England. Like, it probably deserves a worse grade. I'm maybe giving Belichick and their track record probably a little more credit than I would other organizations. But you have Rob Gronkowski also playing football, but playing football somewhere else. James Devlin retires. Jamie Collins, you lose him. Danny Shelton, Ted Karras, Landon Rob, you know, they lose Tom Brady, but they lose a bunch of other good players as well. And so C for the New England Patriots.
Right smack in the middle. Dan, you're typically our most difficult grader. What you got? Oh, yep, lower again.
I understand what these guys are saying. I, too, believe in and respect
Good
Bill
grief.
Belichick. But if I'm grading a student, I'm not, who got an A last year and he's doing C work, I'm not going to say, oh, well, he got an A last year, so I'm going to bump it up to a B. So far this offseason, the Patriots have a D at best. I thought I was being generous giving them a D until I heard these C grades. But I believe he can still improve the team. And if we do this again in 2-3 months, the grade might go up. Right now, hasn't done enough.
All right. Once again, Dan the toughest. Here we go. Let's see what he does with the Bills. They made a big splash trading their 2020 first-round pick for Stephon Diggs. He led the Vikings with over 1,100 receiving yards last season. Also added to the mix, Josh Norman to be the opposite corner to Tre'Davious White. They did lose Lorenzo Alexander. He retired after spending 15 seasons in the NFL. Okay, we'll wrap it up with the Bills. Tim, are you take us, start us off here? Where you got?
Yeah, I'm going B plus. I'm going B plus for the Bills. Yeah, I mean, look, I look at the Stephon Diggs thing. I think it helps them immensely. I actually already think it was a pretty good roster. And, you know, when you look at some of the additions, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think some solid veteran players help a talented young group. So whether it's Mario Addison, A.J. Klein, Josh Norman into the mix. He's not the same Josh Norman, but I think he could be helpful there in Buffalo. So when you look at that, look, I think it was a good roster that improved, and I think the Stephon Diggs thing is a really big deal. That's why it's a B+.
Marcus?
The really good Bills. I like what they did. I like it a lot. And let me tell you why. Wendy, a lot of it has a lot to do with what Tim just said. But the fact that they got Diggs is huge. For Josh Allen, a developing quarterback that had a pretty good season last year. And we saw improvement as that season went along as well. People talk about the Josh Norman signing. I think it is huge that they got Josh Norman. You know why? Because on the other side, there's a young cornerback by the name of Tre'Davious White. This defense was significantly upgraded with Josh Norman coming in. Two formidable corners, and McDermott has done a tremendous job with the Buffalo Bills. And as you saw, we just ranked the New England Patriots offseason at C's, myself and Tim, and Dan a D. So that elevates the Bills, in my opinion.
All right, Dan, what you got?
I gave him A minus.
I don't
That's
believe
my best
it.
Grade of the day. But, you know, I enjoy doing TV with Marcus Spears so much. He's got me in a positive mood. I'm upgrading it to an A. I think there's nothing not to like about the Bills offseason. Yes. Kind of like there wasn't anything not to like about last Bills offseason.
I didn't think you gave A's.
Yes.
So that's good.
Wow.
Well,
you do.
Marcus has
okay,
that
there you go. All right, listen. Anyway, we'll recap here. The AFC East grades, the Bills, Dolphins, and Jets all got an A from somebody. The Dolphins getting the rare A++. I don't know about that, Marcus, but it's good. There is consensus the Patriots had the worst offseason among all AFC East teams. But again, a certain guy by the name of Bill Belichick is still running the show.
I'm not going to shave or cut my hair until I can throw a football again.
Like throw it? Like to a toddler or throw
nope.
it?
Nope, like throw it. To one of my teammates, like a legit NFL pass.
Oh boy, Big Ben tweeted this out, throwing to teammates James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Ryan Switzer, and followed through on that promise to trim up the beard. Well, remember when Matt Ryan was a young gun like Patrick Mahomes? Time flies. The Falcons quarterback turned 35 on Sunday, and it moved him into the distinguished category of quarterbacks 35 and older. But age is just a number, right? There are 20 expected starting QBs for the 2020 season under the age of 30. That includes 12 under the age of 25, including Super Bowl MVP and MVP Lamar Jackson. 63% of all starting quarterbacks are under the age of 30. So, gentlemen, quickly, of the 35-year-plus guys, Big Ben, Brady, Breeze, Rivers, Rodgers, Ryan, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, do you see this group getting more than one collective Super Bowl ring? Dan?
Oh, yeah. Wendy, you know how I am, glass half full, always looking on the positive side of things. I think, you know, Mahomes can't win them all. These guys are wily. They're smart. I think among that group, they'll cobble together a couple more Super Bowl titles.
Tim?
A couple more. I'm taking the under on this. Listen, Brady, Breeze, Rivers, Ben, like, these guys all could be one and done, like, one more year left, you know, for those guys. Listen, look, guys like
Matt Ryan,
you know, Breeze and Rodgers, they've only won one.
Well, when you put it like that, Marcus, what you got?
Come on, Tim. Yes. It's over. Look, first of all, one of them, I think, is going to get one this year. He may play in New Orleans. I'm not making a prediction just yet, but he may. And then Aaron Rodgers is going to get another one. It just won't be with Green Bay. That puts you at two. So there you go.
There is the true glass half full fella. But all of you, optimism prevailing today. Thank you. See you tomorrow. Bye.